A few years ago, I was going through a period in my life which I would probably define as a winter time. Winter not because of the physical characteristics of ice and snow and cold, but a spiritual winter, a time when God felt distant, when it felt like there were more crisis than celebrations, when it felt like things were pretty dry and I was feeling very weary. I wonder if you've gone through a time in your life where it has felt a bit like winter, a bit like you know where you're supposed to be going, but there's this period in your life where things are put on hold, where life slows down and almost feels like it's coming to a stop. One of the things that happens for us in these kinds of times, whether it's a time where maybe you feel like you need more education to get where you're going, or maybe you just need a little more time and experience to be able to get that job you want, or maybe you need to walk through this time of health crisis before you can really see anything beyond that, during these times, sometimes God lets our life slow down so that the character that he's forming in us can catch up to the call that he's placed on us. A time of formation, when God wants to do some deep work in the very inner part of our life in order to prepare us for what is coming next. Now, through this series that we're doing called Heartstrings, we're talking all about this character formation, these things that God puts into our life to prepare us for the kind of life that he wants us to live, the things that he has for us to do, the kind of things he wants us to be able to experience in the course of our life. And to look at this, these character pieces that God is putting in us, we're following along the story of King David, who lived about 1,000 years before Jesus. So we're talking about 3,000 years ago from where we are today. And as we see in the life of David, God was putting all of these kind of heartstrings, these pieces of his character together. And this idea of a winter season, a season where the music slows, is something that David very much had to deal with. Now, just to set the stage for us a little bit here this morning. Oh, Zach, you back me up to, there we go. Thank you. To set the stage for us a little bit this morning, just to kind of catch up with the story a little bit, David, where we are in the story, is the next anointed king of the people of Israel. Saul is the current king, and David has been anointed by Samuel because God is unhappy with Saul. He's taken his spirit away from King Saul. He's given it to King David. But David is not king yet. And he's in this awkward in-between time, between the time when he's been anointed to be king and when he actually gets to take the throne. And one of the biggest challenges facing David these days is the current king, Saul. David has been serving in his court, playing his harp for him, helping to send away the evil spirit that's come upon Saul every now and again. He's been fighting for Saul as one of his captains. David has been, you know, very, very close to Saul, but Saul, man, he has been trying to kill David. He's doing everything in his power to get rid of him by trying to kill him himself, to try and set up David to get him killed by the Philistines. Saul is one of the biggest obstacles right now, it seems, to David actually achieving the dream, the vision that God has given him to be king. So as David waits for the throne, as David waits for this time when God will actually make him king, God is going to do some serious heart formation in David. He is going to do some serious work to form some more character traits in David that he wants him to have to live out the rest of his days as king. And we're going to be reading about that this morning. But just before we get into the text, let's take a moment and pray, and then we're going to be reading. It's going to be in 1 Samuel chapter 20 to 23. If you want to follow along this morning, that's where we're going to be. But let's take a moment and ask God to meet us in his word today. Father, we give you thanks for this new morning. We give you thanks for your word and that in it you have recorded so much for us to be able to see who you are, to be able to see the things that you are doing in us, to see the love you have for us and the love you have for our world. But Father, as we open up the story of King David again today, as we open up your word, would you speak to us the things that are on your heart for each one of us today? Lord, I just pray that you would open up our eyes to see in the text what we each need to see. That you'd open up our ears to hear your Holy Spirit whispering to each one of us. And Lord, open up our hearts to respond to you. with gladness and joy in whatever it is you're calling us to do today. We just pray all these things in Jesus' good name. Amen. All right. Well, so here's how this is going to break down for us today. As we read through the story, we're going to see that David comes across three significant challenges. And in each one of these significant challenges, God uses it to form one of these heartstrings in the life of David, a character piece in the life of David, something that he needed for going forward. So the first struggle we see comes to us right away in chapter 20, verses 1 and 2. And just to remind you again, David, as much as Saul, King Saul has been a problem for him, Saul's son Jonathan has been a huge support and encouragement for David. In fact, we heard last week about how they really were soul friends. They had this incredible kinship together. And that's important as we get into this first struggle that David faces, which is a relational struggle that he's going to come across. So, 1 Samuel 20, verse 1 and 2. Then David fled from Naoth at Ramah and went to Jonathan and asked, "What have I done? What is my crime? How have I wronged your father that he's trying to kill me?" "Never," Jonathan replied. "You're not going to die. Look, my father doesn't do anything, great or small, without letting me know. Why would he hide this from me? It isn't so." Well, here's the struggle. The struggle that David and Jonathan are facing in their relationship right now is the struggle over how they each see King Saul and what he's trying to do. They are seeing very, very different pictures of Jonathan's father in their experience of him. David is seeing Saul trying to kill him. Jonathan just sees his father, this warrior, but never seeing him try and go after David. He hasn't witnessed that himself. So he can't even believe that his father would do anything to David, especially given the kind of man that David is. Why would my father try and kill you? That doesn't make any sense. The seeds of doubt are being planted in their relationship because they see things differently. And this isn't just sort of a difference in perspective. This actually had some pretty big implications. See, for David, his concern, I think, would be that Jonathan is blind to what kind of man his father really is. He's blind to the fact that Saul really wants to kill David, so he's worried that Jonathan might actually just hand David over to Saul because he thinks there's no problem. And then David's life would be in danger. And so it actually gets to a point where David says to Jonathan in verse 8, he says, "Why don't you just kill me yourself? Like, seriously, if this is going to go on like this, just kill me yourself. I'd rather have you kill me than your dad kill me." A little bit paranoid here about what Jonathan's going to do. Now, for Jonathan, the concern is a little different. I think he's so concerned that David is getting absolutely obsessed with Saul and thinking that Saul's trying to kill him. It's like he's seeing a demon behind every bush kind of thing, right? He's seeing Saul camping out and chasing after him all the time. And Jonathan just thinks, "You're crazy, David. There's nothing there." And so I think Jonathan's concern is that, you know, if David continues with this obsession and this paranoia, when David comes to power as king, he's likely to wipe out all of Saul's family because he's worried about what's going to happen. And that includes Jonathan, even though they've covenanted together. He's worried for his own life and the life of his family. And as we read this, we got to wonder, like, is this friendship going to survive? Can they make it through this when there's all this doubt, when there's all these things going on? And this is one of the things that happens when the music of our life slows down. When we hit those times in our life where life just comes to a grinding halt, and we're feeling all these other pressures all around us, and it's not just cruising along nicely, doubt begins to creep in. In particular, doubt about people that God has placed in our journey with us. And we start to question motives, and we start to question friendships, and are you really my friend? Are you really the one that I think you are? Will you stand with me? Doubt begins to creep into those relational spaces in our life. But in the midst of that, there's also an incredible opportunity that God has to form something significant in us, if we'll let him do it. And we see this happen in the life of David and Jonathan. God does something amazing here in the midst of the pressure. We read this in verses 12 to 17. Then Jonathan said to David, "I swear by the Lord, the God of Israel, that I will surely sound out my father by this time, the day after tomorrow. If he's favorably disposed toward you, will I not send you word and let you know? But if my father intends to harm you, may the Lord deal with Jonathan, be it ever so severely, if I do not let you know and send you away in peace. May the Lord be with you as he has been with my father, but show me unfailing kindness like the Lord's kindness as long as I live, so that I may not be killed, and do not ever cut off your kindness from my family, not even when the Lord has cut off every one of David's enemies from the face of the earth. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, may the Lord call David's enemies to account. And Jonathan had David reaffirm his oath out of love for him, because he loved him as he loved himself. So in the face of relational struggle, David and Jonathan make a covenant together. And they go through this whole thing where Jonathan's going to go and figure out what's going on with his dad and come back to David and let him know what's happening so that David can either escape or come back to the court. But they make a covenant that they're not going to harm one another, but they'll watch out for each other, protect each other, that they'll stay strong together through this struggle, even though Saul is really doing things that could tear them apart. Which brings us to our first heartstring today, which is the heartstring of commitment. God creating in us a character of commitment. Not just to run away at the first sign of danger or at the first sign that the relationship is having a little bit of trouble or something else is going on that could threaten our relationship. But choosing to be committed. Now the thing about commitment that I think is true is that commitment really is only formed in struggle. If everything is good in a relationship, why do you need commitment? If you're getting everything you need from another person, why would you have to be committed to them? It's easy to stay together. It's when stuff starts to go wrong, the commitment actually makes a difference. And so here, in the midst of a relational struggle, when the music has slowed down in David's life, God is forming this heartstring of commitment in him, shaping his character. Now, the challenge for us is I think oftentimes we do the opposite of what David and Jonathan did. When we're in a relational struggle, when things are tense, it's way easier to either pick a fight or move on. Right? We get angry, we get entitled, we start thinking, you shouldn't be doing this, I don't deserve this. So therefore, I'm going to either get in a fight with you or I'm just going to take off and leave you behind, because right now, relationships are pretty interchangeable. Dime a dozen, right? You can pick up friends all over the place. I got over like 400 friends on Facebook, I can go hang out with one of them. What do I need you for, right? It happens in friendships, happens in churches, happens in marriages, where when stuff gets difficult, instead of deciding to say, you know what, I'm going to allow God to form this character of commitment in me, we just say, I've had enough and I'm out of here. But perhaps God has that person in your life for such a time as this. Maybe they actually have an incredibly important purpose to serve by being in your life through this time of struggle. For David, Jonathan was an incredibly important person to keep him encouraged and keep him going through this time of struggle. Can you imagine if he just would have walked away from him? God had placed him there for such a time as this. And maybe you're walking through a time of struggle and difficulty because God is forming commitment in you. So the first struggle that David faces is a relational struggle. And David and Jonathan decide to stick it out. They dig in. Jonathan does go to his father, figures out what's going on, finds out that, yes, his father actually does intend to murder David. And so he comes back to David, and they've worked out this signal whereby Jonathan can let David know that really you should hit the road and get on the run because my father's coming after you. And he does just that. And so now David is on the run, which is going to lead him to his second struggle that he faces along the way, which is a motivational struggle, a motivational challenge that David faces. What do you do when the dream or the vision of where you're going is hidden by the fog of life? When you can't see the destination on the horizon, what do you do? When it just seems kind of clouded over and you feel kind of stuck, like you can't see much of anything. Have you guys ever driven through that kind of weather? Right? I remember driving through a prairie storm years ago. Tara and I were driving from Regina up to Brooks, Alberta, and we were going for a weekend of camping. And you guys may remember this. This was back in about 2000, 2001, somewhere in there. And there was a tornado that ripped through a campground up in Sylvan Lake, Alberta. You guys remember this? And so we're driving that weekend to go up to Brooks, Alberta from Regina. And what we caught for the prairie storm was the tail end of that tornado storm that kind of whipped around, right? Because they had like the center of the storm and the end of it was what we were driving through. And so there was this incredibly heavy rain. There was all these lightning bolts striking all over the place. We seriously could not see very far in front of our car at all. And so at one point, we decided we really can't see where we're going. We should stop. So we stopped on the side of the road, and then we thought, if someone comes up behind us, there's no way they're going to see that we've stopped, and they're going to just plow right into us. Like, this isn't a good idea. And so we started going again just really, 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 really slowly along the road just to try and, you know, if someone was coming behind us, at least I could kind of keep going a little bit so we wouldn't get hit. But what do you do when you can't see far down the road towards what God has called you to? What do you do? Well, David desired above all things to follow after God and God's call, which was ultimately for him to be king. That was what David was doing. But right now, he was on the run. He knew where he was supposed to be going. It was pretty obvious. You've been anointed to be king of Israel. Okay, well, the goal is the throne. But right now, he's running away from the throne into the wilderness. It's kind of hard to see how he's going to get there. So let's see what he does. And this is chapter 21, verses 1 to 3. David went to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest. Ahimelech trembled when he met him and asked, "Why are you alone? Why is there no one with you?" David answered Ahimelech the priest, "The king sent me on a mission and said to me, 'No one is to know anything about the mission I'm sending you on. As for my men, I've told them to meet me at a certain place. Now then, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread or whatever you can find.'" So notice what David does. He's on the run. He's just been sent away by Jonathan. He's heading out. He doesn't really know how he's going to be getting back to what God's asked him to do. And David chooses to take just the next obvious step of obedience, which is to survive. There's not a whole lot romantic or like, wow, big step, David, kind of thing. He just knew he had to live. And so he went to the one place he figured he could actually get some help. He went to Nob, talked to Ahimelech. He got some food. He also got the sword of Goliath, because that's where it was. Ahimelech had kept it there in Nob. And so he got some food. He got a sword so that he would be able to survive. Which brings us to our second heartstring today. When we can't see the path to the destination, we can't see how it's going to work itself out, sometimes what we need is a heartstring of progress. Forming a character of progress, just being able to take the next step. Even when he couldn't see right to the finish line, David took the next step in the right direction. He probably didn't even know how this step could, you know, it wasn't like this step was like a real big launch pad to the throne. This was just about not dying. It's a wonderful thing for us to be able to hear the call of God. It's a wonderful thing to have a sense of what he is drawing us towards. It's a wonderful thing to know that he has a purpose for our life and he's called us into that to go live that out. But it takes a lot of steps to get there. Sometimes for some of you, you know, you're thinking already about educational stuff because you're kind of coming out of that high school age and you're thinking about where God has called you to, and maybe you have an idea of something, maybe overseas, maybe somewhere around here, maybe working within, just a regular job but serving him there. Whatever it is, you probably still can see lots of steps in front of you. Things like, you know, maybe getting a degree or getting a trade or something like that just to start you down that path. And the end goal is a long ways off, but right now the key thing is actually to put in your application for school, right? Or to find a place to live. Like that's the next step, ultimately, that leads to the call that God's placed on your life. It's a long ways off. It doesn't even maybe look like much, but sometimes we just need to take the next step. My problem is with this, I have a bit of a personality that wants the big win, right? Like, who doesn't want to actually win the lottery? Anybody not want to win the lottery? Yeah, I didn't think so. It's because it's such a temptation, right? It's just like, if only I had all of that, then I wouldn't have any problems, right? If only I could just have the whole thing all at once, then it would all be good. The hard part is, instead of just going to try and win the lottery, setting aside that small bit of money day by day by day by day by day, every day, so that ultimately one day you have something. Instead of just looking for the big lottery win of kind of arriving at the call, being willing to take a step in the direction of the call, and the next day take another step, and the next day take another step. A long obedience in the same direction. God doesn't often just kind of uproot us from one place and put us right smack dab in the place of our calling, and now we're just there. It's a long journey, because during the journey is a lot of what he uses to form who we're going to be when we arrive. Like for David, he uses time of formation so that his character could catch up with the call that God had placed on his life. Does the same thing with us. So we want to reach the finish line. That's good. But sometimes what God is giving us is not that jump to the finish line, but just what we need to take the next step. Allow him to form in us the character piece, the heartstring of progress, taking a step in the direction he wants us to go. So David faced a relational struggle, the seeds of doubt in that relationship with Jonathan. God brought about commitment in him. He faced a motivational struggle. What do I do when I can't see how to get to the end? Okay, there's a heartstring of progress. I need to take the next step. I need to keep moving forward to what God's called me to. The third struggle David faced was a struggle with temptation. A struggle with temptation. So he's running, he's on the run, and he's trying to get away. And what we read in chapter 21, verse 10, is that David does this. That day, David fled from Saul and went to Achish, king of Gath. Right? Okay, Gath was in Philistia. The Philistines were not part of Israel. They were, in fact, the enemy of Israel. And so David goes to try and live among his enemies. Now, you could say, well, that makes sense, because he was trying to get away from Saul, and the last logical place Saul would look would be among his enemies. Okay, maybe. But it could be that it was actually a little bit worse than that. David, at this point, I think, is tired. He's weary. He's burned out. He needs a break. Can you imagine if you were in your job and day after day your boss was actually trying to kill you? Chucking spears at you every day? Like, you get a little worn out from that, right? That's not a lot of fun. No one has that, right? Don't put up your hand. Tell me later, okay? Just saying. Anyways, so David, he's worn out. He's beat down, and he is looking for a place to get a break. And so he goes and looks to make a truce with his enemy, to try and work out some kind of compromise so the Philistines will let him live among them in their city. He just wants some way to get a break from the pursuit of Saul. But the Philistines, well, they weren't so willing to negotiate. The servants of Achish said to him, "Isn't this David, the king of the land? Isn't he the one they sing about in their dances? Saul has slain his thousands and David his tens of thousands. We don't want him living here. Like, isn't this stupid? He's going to be killing us too." And so David, as they come to his door, which was what the story that Liam was reading to us earlier, David realizes his mistake in judgment and realizes how great a danger he is in. And so he pretends to be insane so that they will just hopefully let him go, because what's the point in keeping a madman around? And that's exactly what happens. Achish sees David. He's like, "Why do I need this madman in my presence? Get him out of here." And David escapes. He escapes from his enemy, but he also escapes from his attempts to make a truce with his enemy. Now, we have an enemy of our souls. We talk about him by many different names: Satan, the deceiver, the devil, whatever you want, whatever name you want to attach to him. But we have an enemy of our souls who wants to take us down. That's really all he's in it for, is to destroy you. And when we are weary, when we are burned out, when we are tired, when we just feel the fatigue of life pounding at us again and again and again, when we keep feeling the spears whizzing by our ear all the time, day after day, and we're just beat up and worn out, that is when the enemy loves to come along with temptation. A temptation just to find a way to have a little break, just a little break from life. And sometimes he'll offer us that break in a bottle or a little bag of something, or maybe on our computer screen, or maybe with another person who comes into our life who knows us so or understands us so much better than our spouse does. And he offers us a little escape just to get away, to refresh again. When we're weary, that's when temptation can come. And that's when we need the heartstring of resistance, which is the heartstring God placed into David's life at this point. In David's case, it was a little bit abrupt because God basically got him, in a sense, kicked out of the city. That helped. But when the enemy comes, when we are tired and weary, and offers to make a truce with us, to get us to take him up on something, we got to realize that we cannot negotiate with him. Here's the thing. He doesn't want just a little bit of you. He doesn't want you for just 5 minutes or a day so you can have a rest. He wants all of you. It's not just the one click he wants you to take. That click is going to lead to another click, which will lead to another click, which will lead to another click, which will lead to another click, until you are so far down the rabbit hole that he's gotcha. It's not just going to be satisfied with that one little wink from your coworker. Oh, maybe a nice word. Maybe we should go out for coffee. Maybe we should have dinner together. Maybe sin is never satisfied with the one little choice. It is insatiable. And the further down the rabbit hole you go, the more it's got you in its grip, and it will pull you down all the harder. We cannot negotiate with the enemy of our soul when he offers us a truce to be able to just have a little break, because he will consume you. If we give him a bit of our heart, he is going to want to take the rest. Now, the good news of this is that we don't resist on our own. We don't do this on our own at all. God actually offers this to us. This is a character trait he's forming in us. This is something he offers us in the midst of temptation, the heartstring of resistance. He actually puts it out there for us. Paul talked about it in terms of the armor of God, right? The helmet of salvation, the breastplate of righteousness, the belt of truth, the shoes of the readiness of the gospel of peace, the shield of faith, the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. These are the elements of the armor that God has given you to be clothed so that, Paul says, in the day of testing, you will be able to stand. You will be able to stand. So stand firm then, clothed in God's armor, so that the enemy will not take you out. God offers us the ability to resist temptation. He doesn't leave us on our own. Now, I have been in the midst of temptation, and I have heard the voice of God offering me a way out. And I can tell you that I have both chosen to ignore that voice and to respond to it. I've done both. But I can tell you that in that moment of temptation, there is a way to resist. David chose to take God up on his offer. He received God's offer of resistance, and he fled away from his enemy. He got away. And what we see happening right afterwards is this. David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. When his brothers and his father's household heard about it, they went down to him there. All those who were in distress or in debt or discontented gathered around him, and he became their commander. About 400 men were with him. Right after David resists the temptation to give in, God provides him what he needs to carry on. His family comes down and rallies around him. These discontented, these ones who were in trouble, they came. They had this holy discontent that things were not right in Israel. And they came and rallied around David. And as we read later in David's life, these guys become his mighty men. This is his band of brothers. These are the guys that rally around him and go and do mighty exploits, wiping out incredible enemies. These guys are unbelievable. And as soon as David has resisted this temptation to compromise with his enemy, God provides him something better. God gives us a way out. And he does bring blessing as we choose to resist. But the flip side of this, if we choose to just say, you know what, I give in, well, we see that in the life of Saul and what he chose to do. Because Saul chose to give in to the enemy. In giving in to his paranoia and his fear, he was obsessed with David. Totally fearful of him, which is why he kept trying to kill him. And Saul let his paranoia and his fear go so far that this is what he did. In chapter 22, verse 17, the king ordered the guards at his side, turn and kill the priests of the Lord, because they too have sided with David. They knew he was fleeing, yet they did not tell me. This is when Saul went to Nob, to Ahimelech and his family. And he gets there and he asks him, what did you do to help out David? They tell him, well, we inquired of the Lord and we did all these things because we thought he was on a mission for you, king. And the king says, let's strike them all down. Because they helped David escape from me and they didn't even tell me. He is so consumed by his paranoia and his fear that he wipes out all these priests of the Lord. Now, what it says in the next part of this verse, but the king's officials were unwilling to raise a hand to strike the priests of the Lord. They knew this was a terrible idea. They all saw how wrong this was. They saw how consumed Saul was. They knew this wasn't the right choice to make. And so Saul, instead of getting his guards to do it, gets Doeg the Edomite, the one who ratted out the priests in the first place, to come. And he strikes them all down and all the people in the village. Saul is so consumed by his fear and his hate that he does something unthinkable, and it really shows now Saul for who he is. Now all the nation could see him for who he was, this fearful, hate-consumed man. And that starts to pave the way now for David to come to the throne. In the struggle of temptation, we can go one of two ways. We can either receive that heartstring of resistance that God gives us, or we can choose to give in to the temptation of the enemy. Both have consequences. So when the music slows, when our life kind of comes to that place where things slow down, where it doesn't feel like we're moving really fast towards the dream, the call that God has for us, we can face some big challenges. They might be relational, they might be motivational, they might be about temptation. But we can know that in the midst of this, God is using this time to form something really significant in us. For David, he was forming in him commitment. He was forming in him a sense of progress. He was forming in him resistance so that he would have the kind of character he needed to rule on the throne one day. For us too, waiting time is not wasted time. Time when we have to wait for that next great step forward is not time that's wasted in God's economy. He's got a purpose for it. He's got a purpose for it. So maybe that's you right now. Maybe you're in that kind of season right now where it feels like it's just a season of winter when stuff is kind of, the landscape of your life feels a little barren. You know, it's just kind of feeling like there's no traction moving forward. There's lots of crises right now. There's not a lot of reason for celebration and joy, and you're just feeling worn out. Maybe you're feeling like your relationships are really stressed right now. Maybe you're feeling stalled in whatever you're trying to accomplish. Maybe you're facing temptations right now because you're just beat up and worn out. But consider today that God is actually on the move in your life. He is forming something significant in you. Within our Alliance language, we would say this is part of the role that Jesus is our sanctifier. Forming in us a holy life, taking away and stripping away the sinfulness of our character, and instead placing in us the character of himself. For me, I can tell you that the season of winter that I've walked through has been incredibly important for me, forming a greater sense of dependence on God, knowing how much I can't do and how much I need Him. It's helped form in me a greater sense of His love for me, understanding that, and also my identity in Christ as a child of God. It's helped form in me a greater love for others, a greater love for you than I had before. So I want to encourage you today, like David did. Man, this is an opportunity. If you're walking through this season, if you've just come through a season like this, if you can see one on the horizon where it's looking a little bleak coming down the road, I want to encourage you to let God shape you through this time. See what He has that He wants to form in you. Because if you do, you're soon going to be on your way again.